From Typhoon Alley. That's right, Typhoon Alley. The capital city of the Philippine Islands, Manila. Hi, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and this is yet another weekend edition of Coast to Coast AM. My honor and privilege to be escorting you through the weekend. Jim Bell will be here, telephone lines permitting. Remember last week? Should be very interesting. He's at home, so we should be able to get a good phone connection this night, I hope, or you can add it to the list of conspiracies that have gone down on this program. I mean, it would be impossible that we would not get a good connection tonight. I said Typhoon Alley because here we are again. Somebody sent me an email, bless you, I think, and said, well, Art, there's another one headed your way. Sure enough, I went to the website, and there it is. Forecast to be at least a Category 4, if not 5. And its name is Durian, D-U-R-I-A-N, and it should have winds approaching 270 kilometers when it makes landfall here in the Philippines about Thursday or so. Now, right now, the storm track would seem to show that it's more or less headed for us. And it would seem as though I have moved straight into the middle of Typhoon Alley here. There's simply no question about it. There have been, it's just been a typhoon after typhoon after typhoon. And just as they did in the Atlantic the season previous, they've all grown into Cat 4, Cat 5 at the least. I mean, just super typhoons. And the last couple have had the northern part of the Philippines, where the mountains are, to batter away at, which is no great deal. It always hurts somebody, but better in the mountains, of course. This one, I've got not a good feeling about. By the way, durian, D-U-R-I-A-N, is also a fruit here in the Philippines, which my wife informs me smells awful and is protected. This is a fruit that has these long stickers that come out of it. So if one falls on you from a durian tree, it kills you. It's like a fruit with daggers, and there have been a number of people killed by durian fruit. So I guess it is an appropriate name for a typhoon. We'll watch Typhoon Durian. And if the web moguls are up at this hour, you can go to the usual Typhoon 2000 and put a graphic up, if you will. But it really does look like this one is certainly potentially headed for... Well, that'll take care of my antenna. That'll take care of my antenna problems. If Durian were to strike as Millennio did and directly hit Manila, that would sweep away my antenna, just erase it as though it were never there. All right, let's look around the world a little bit. Then we'll do some open lines and hope for, cross our fingers, knock on pressed wood for Jim Bell. The journey home at the end of the long Thanksgiving weekend was smooth sailing for many travelers Sunday, although, have you seen it? It's on the news nets. Snow slowed the journey for some in the West. In Washington, 15 inches of snow fell near the Canadian border, and traffic slowed to a crawl on the state's main east-west corridor. Farther south, chains were mandatory on vehicles traveling on two major highways linking Sacramento, California, to ski resorts in Nevada's Lake Tahoe area. Now, here in the Philippines, nobody has ever seen snow. Except in the movies or on television, there just is no such thing, no matter how high you would go. There are some pretty high mountains here, but not high enough to get to snow. Sunni, Shiite, and Kurdish leaders called Sunday for an end to Iraq's sectarian conflict, vowed to track down those responsible for the war's deadliest attack, but As they went on national TV to try to keep Iraq from sliding into an all-out civil war, fighting between Iraqi security forces and Sunni Arab insurgents raged for yet a second day north of Baghdad. That doesn't look good. What's going on in Iraq just does not look good. An angry crowd demanded Sunday to know just why police officers killed an unarmed man on the day of his wedding, firing dozens of shots. I heard about 50. that also wounded two of the man's friends. Some called for the ouster of the city's police commissioner. At a vigil and rally the day after 23-year-old Sean Bell was supposed to have married the mother of his two young children, a crowd led by the Reverend Al Sharpton shouted, "No justice, no peace." Congressional leaders displayed eroding patience in the Iraqi government on Sunday. They're no longer confident, adding pressure on President Bush and the Iraqi prime minister to find a faster path to peace when they meet this week. It's not too late. The United States can still extricate itself honorably from an impending disaster in Iraq, according to Republican Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, a potential presidential contender in 2008. He said that in urging for a planned withdrawal of U.S. troops. We've now been there longer, been involved in Iraq longer than World War II went on. A motorcycle officer injured last week while escorting the president in the islands died Sunday. Steve Favela, 30, and two other officers crashed their cycles as the presidential motorcade was traveling across Hickam Air Force Base to meet troops for breakfast early Tuesday. The other officers were treated at the Queens Medical Center and then released. The leftist nationalist, who is friendly with Venezuela's anti-U.S. president, is holding a commanding lead over a Bible-toting banana tycoon in Sunday's runoff, presidential election down in Ecuador. So it looks like Ecuador may go that away. An official quick vote count and two exit polls showed that Rafael Carrera, a U.S.-trained economist who has rattled Wall Street by threatening to reduce foreign debt payments and oppose free trade efforts, declared victory shortly after a very quick count was announced on Sunday, but his opponent didn't concede. So we'll see. Interesting story. A woman faces a fine for a peace sign. A homeowners association in southwestern Colorado is threatening to fine a resident $25 a day until she removes a Christmas wreath with a peace sign that some say is an anti-Iraq war protest or perhaps even a symbol of Satan. Some residents who have complained have children serving in Iraq, said the president of the homeowners association there. He said some residents have also believed it might be a symbol of Satan. Three or four residents have complained. Well, it looks like, to me, just an old-fashioned peace symbol. In a story unusual even for a soap opera and believed to be perhaps a television first, ABC's All My Children this week will introduce a transgender character who is beginning to make the transition from man to woman. The character, a flamboyant rock star known as Zarf, kisses the lesbian character, Bianca, and much drama ensues. The storyline begins with Thursday's episode of the daytime drama. So, usually when a TV show begins doing things like that, it means ratings difficulties. Not always, I suppose, but usually when they really reach out to the fringe, it means they've seen some erosion somewhere, and so they've got to make some moves. In a moment, we'll look at some of the rest of the news. You know, let me add that I actually, all my life, I have enjoyed storms. I have always enjoyed storm tracking, storm chasing, storms in general. But this year, the half year that I have been here in what obviously is Typhoon Alley here in the Pacific, I always thought typhoons curved further to the north and generally went up and smacked Okinawa and then Japan. But now I learn that there is a second, more traveled track that comes right across the Philippines and then goes on to Vietnam, our neighbor. If his experiment in splitting photons should actually work, says University of Washington physicist John Kramer, the next step is going to be to test for quantum retrocausality. That's Science Talk for saying he hopes to find evidence of a photon going backward in time. Quote, it doesn't seem like it should work, but on the other hand, I can't see what would prevent it from working, said Kramer. If it does work, you could receive the signal 50 microseconds before you send it. And what? Wait a minute. What's that supposed to mean? Roughly put, Kramer is talking about the subatomic equivalent of arriving at a train station before you've left home. Or you might think of it as winning the lottery before you bought the ticket or graduating from high school before you've been born, something like that. It probably will not work, he said again carefully, peering through his large glasses as if to determine his audience's mental capacity for digesting what he was about to say. Kramer, an accomplished experimental physicist who also writes science fiction, knows that it all sounds more like a made-for-TV script on the Sci-Fi Channel than anything really serious. But if it doesn't work, we should be able to learn something new about quantum mechanics by simply trying it, he said. What he and UW colleague Warren Nargoni plan to try soon is an experiment aimed at resolving some terrible contradictions in one of the most fundamental branches of physics known as quantum mechanics or quantum theory. To be honest, I only have a faint understanding of what John's talking about, Nargoni said, smiling, though claiming to be just a technician on the project. Kramer's technician partner previously assisted with the research of Hans Demelt, the UW scientist who won the 1989 Nobel Prize in Physics. Quantum theory describes the behavior of matter and energy at the atomic and subatomic levels, a level of reality where most of the more familiar Newtonian laws of physics, which explain why planets spin, airplanes fly, baseballs curve, no longer apply. The problem with quantum theory, put simply, is that it's really weird. Findings at the quantum level just don't fit well with either Newton's or Einstein's view of reality at the macro level, and attempts to explain quantum behavior often appear inherently contradictory. There's a whole zoo of quantum paradoxes out there, said Kramer. That's part of the reason Einstein absolutely hated quantum mechanics. One of the paradoxes of interest to Kramer is known as entanglement. We've been talking a lot about that on this program. It's also known as the Einstein Podolsky-Rosen paradox, named for the three scientists who described its apparent absurdity as an argument against quantum theory. Basically, the idea is that interacting or entangled subatomic particles, you know, like two protons, the fundamental units of light, can affect each other no matter how far apart in time or space. If you do a measurement on one, it has an immediate effect on the other, even if they're separated by light years across the universe, Kramer said. If one of the entangled photons' trajectory tilts up, the other one, no matter how distant, will tilt down to compensate. Einstein ridiculed the idea as spooky action at a distance. Now, that's not very scientific, even for Einstein. Spooky action at a distance. Quantum mechanics must be wrong, the father of relativity contended, because that behavior requires some kind of signal passing between the two particles at a speed faster than light. And of course, that's absolutely correct. So that really does mean that they might be able to receive a signal just before they send it. And that, of course, will lead to time travel. On the surface, Thiago Olsen is like any other typical teenager. He's on the cross-country track team at Stony Creek High School in Rochester Hills. Good-looking, clean-cut, 17-year-old, 3.75 grade average. And he's got his eyes fixed on the next big step, college. But to his friends, he's known as the mad scientist because in the basement of his parents' Oakland Township home, tucked away in an area most aren't privy to see, he's exhausting his love of physics on a project that has taken him more than 2 years and 1,000 hours now to research and build. It is a large, intricate machine that, on a small scale, creates nuclear fusion. Now, nuclear fusion when atoms are combined to create energy, is a kind of holy grail of physics, said he. In fact, on, and there's a website named here, the Stony Creek Seniors ranked as 18th amateur in the world to create nuclear fusion. So how does he do it? Pointing the steel chamber where all, he's got a big steel chamber where he claims all the magic occurs, said on Friday, this piece of the puzzle serves as a vacuum. The air is sucked out and then into a filter. Then deuterium gas, that's a form of hydrogen, is injected into the vacuum. About 40,000 volts of electricity are charged into the chamber from a piece of equipment taken from an old mammogram machine. As the machine runs, the atoms in the chamber are attracted to the center and soon, ta-da, nuclear fusion. He said when that happens, a small, intense ball of energy forms. He first achieved fusion in September and has been perfecting the machine that he built in his parents' garage ever since. So there you have it. A high school student is the 18th person in the world to create nuclear fusion, in this case, in his parents' basement. You've got to wonder, you've really got to wonder what's going on across the U.S. and other countries of the world. These high school students, these 3.75 and lower grade average students, creating nuclear fusion. It's enough to give you a little nervous tick, isn't it? Russia is going to build a deep space exploration telescope that'll outstrip the U.S.-made Hubble telescope, according to a Russian astronomer. Orbited in 1990, Hubble has been the most successful, the most expensive project in astrophysics, costing now over $6 billion, and I'm not sure that includes the mission coming to fix it. In cooperation with our colleagues from Germany, the UK, China, and Spain, we've set ourselves the task of building the Spectrum Ultraviolet Telescope, which will surpass Hubble in some aspects. Boris Shutov, director of the Astronomy Institute at the Russian Academy of Sciences, told a news conference, the telescope with a 170-centimeter diameter antenna will explore the structure of the universe in the ultraviolet spectrum. Now, they are claiming that in concert with a telescope on Earth, this orbiting telescope will have the power to read a newspaper on the moon. Do you hear me? Read a newspaper on the moon. Now, we already know that Hubble, powerful as it is not able to see any of the artifacts that we Americans left on the moon. Can't see a thing. Too small to resolve. I checked on it after we talked about it on a show a couple of weeks ago. Too small to resolve. And here they're talking about launching a telescope that in concert with another telescope on Earth would actually be able to read a newspaper. Can you believe that? Read a newspaper on the moon. Suicide rates are down for some reason. Nobody understands why. But for 40 years, adolescent suicide rates rose. Then the rates began to decline in the late 1980s for adults 65 and older. And in the early 1990s for adolescents and young adults. But many people were not aware. They just kept saying suicides were increasing, and it's simply no longer true. But nobody knows why. They have no idea of why. It used to be that older people and younger people had a very, very high suicide rate. They would take their own lives for whatever reasons. Nobody really, of course, understood, because when you take your own life, unless you leave a detailed note, nobody really knows why you did it. And now we're finding out that though we thought rates were increasing, they're not. They're decreasing, both for the younger people and for the older people. And that is also true, by the way, around the holidays. We're now, of course, in the middle of the holiday season, which traditionally has been a season of high suicide rate, and it's declining. So I wonder what's going on. Oh, yesterday we were talking about old calculator machines. You remember that? Well, they're working on one of the oldest, about 2,000 years old. There's an astronomical calculator that was found, dug up actually. Its discovery was in 1902. It's a mechanism with intricate and baffling systems of about 30 geared wheels. Been an enigma until now. Our knowledge of its structures, functions, has increased as computer-based imaging analysis and X-ray technicians have worked on it. During the last 50 years, researchers have identified various astronomical and calendar functions, including gears that mimic the movements of the sun and the moon. So even 2,000 years ago, we apparently had machines that emulated movements of our own Earth, of the sun, and had a way of keeping time and learning things. Now, that was just back toward the time of Christ. That long ago, they had those kinds of machines. And we're just now beginning with modern computers to be able to untangle the mystery, the things they understood then. Maybe they understood then a great deal more than we give them credit for. From Manila in the Philippines, I am Art Bell. Indeed, here I am. Hi, everybody. Listen, if you want to get in on Open Lines and you've got something you want to say prior to our guest at the top of the hour, Jim Bell, if the phone lines work, by all means, grab one of those phone numbers and join us. We're going to open lines in just a second here. I've got to say, tonight we're going to be talking about the Mars machines and their cameras and the pictures they're taking of Mars. The one picture that really did kind of grab me was the apparent, alleged skull. Now, I've been on to this for some number of weeks. I haven't said anything about the skull. You know me, I'm sort of a skeptic when it comes to many of the things that Richard Hoagland sees, as I've told Richard, straight to his face, or his ear on the phone. When he sees faces, many times I just see rocks. Rocks. Much to the frustration of Richard, I see rocks. Now, we do have these amazing machines running about on Mars, and they did take one photograph of what appears to be a skull. Now, the human brain tries to make sense out of something it sees that it does not understand, but I don't think the skull falls in that category. Or maybe it does. But the skull is clearly a skull. One doesn't have to sit there and look at it as one would a cloud that seems to form some angelic shape to get it. The skull is just a skull. Now, I suppose in a million rocks, you're going to find one rock that looks like a skull. And that's one possible explanation. And then, of course, another fairly far-fetched one is that it is a skull. Some Martian skull that somehow made it to the top of the ground on Mars. Or something. I have no idea. Anyway, let's take a break, then do some open lines. Stay right where you are. Well, I hope this stinky, deadly fruit named Dorian, also named Typhoon Dorian, does not come our way. But if it does, it's going to be Thursday-ish here, bearing in mind that it's already Monday afternoon here right now, Monday afternoon. So we'll see, but it certainly is looking ominous out there. Let's go to the lines as promised. First-time caller line, it's Todd in Arizona.
Hi, Mr. Bell. I wanted to ask you about some of the music you play and whether or not you went backstage and met Barry and Maurice Gibb at the Bee Gees.
I did not go backstage. No, I have very little weight. In the U.S., why, being who I am, frequently I was able to get backstage. Being who I am here is being nobody. So, no, I didn't get backstage.
Okay.
What was the other question? I'm sorry.
The music you play, I noticed you play Dancing Queen a lot by ABBA, and, you might want to listen to The Day Before You Came or Chiquita by them, because...
Okay, all right. Well, actually, the truth is I worship ABBA. ABBA, there's just not another ABBA. Is there ever going to be another ABBA? Probably not. in our lifetimes. For one thing, music is not what it once was in the harmony category. Now, I've never heard a group as perfect as ABBA. I have seen another documentary on ABBA, and I picked up everything I can on ABBA. They were just an amazing, absolutely an amazing group. Do you know, ABBA was offered $1 billion, that's with a B, $1 billion to get together again and do a tour. And I think wisely, they refused it. Wildcard Line, Bill, you're on the air from Georgia. How you doing, bud?
I'm good, good. I love your show, Art. Listen, I have a question, or it's more of a statement, actually. I'm thinking, like, now with the threat of, you know, terrorism and everything, like, especially the potential nuclear threat, you know, I'm thinking now would be, if they, you know, if there is a conspiracy to keep aliens, you know, to keep the truth about aliens, you know, from the American people, like, now would, like, be the perfect time, like, to, like, disprove some of the radical Islam, you know, which teaches, unfortunately, that, you know, everything you need to know, it comes from the Quran or whatever. I'm thinking, you know, I'm pretty sure there's nothing about aliens in the Quran. I mean, do you think now would be a good time, like to, you know, put, you know what I'm trying to say?
I think I know what you're trying to say.
It would make the terrorists think, well, hell, maybe everything we didn't know is not in the Quran. If aliens are real, then a lot of what we believe is wrong too, you know?
Well, maybe a lot of what we believe is wrong. Who knows? I was listening a little bit earlier to an interview with William Shatner on Fox, and of course they talked to him a lot about, and he's tremendously successful. I mean, with Boston Legal now and so much, including Star Trek behind him, he's an amazing character. But he said something that kind of rocked me back a little bit. He said he was very, very much afraid of death, and the interviewer said, why? And he said, because I don't think there's anything that comes after. Nothing. And so I suppose somebody with that point of view would be, indeed, very much afraid of death. Now, it's interesting because I'm not really afraid of death. I realize that the grim reaper lies ahead in my life somewhere, not all that far away, probably. But either way, it can't be that horrible. A bit of pain, like you get at the dentist, I suppose. And then you're gone. And either you go on to some sort of heaven, purgatory or hell, depending on your belief system. Or the, 72 virgins, I don't know. Or there's nothing at all. And nothing at all would be not that bad. Really wouldn't be that bad. It would be a cessation of life, but it wouldn't be a painful eternity of paying for your sins. It would simply be nothing. So I don't know. Fear of death, I suppose it's in all of us a little bit, but I've sort of rationalized it to one of those possibilities. And I don't believe, as William Shatner does, that there is nothing past this. He'd be an interesting interview, wouldn't he? Maybe I should work on interviewing William Shatner one day. But if what he believes is true, that's nothing to necessarily be afraid of. Let's go to west of the Rockies and say hello, Sheila from Arizona.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
When you were talking about entanglement earlier, and you mentioned that one proton would affect another proton at a distance.
Mm-hmm. In fact, if one proton goes up, the other at any distance, even light years away, goes down to compensate. Yes.
But how? Is that just any proton or all protons? Or I don't understand how it does. It choose one proton to affect, or
it chooses its mate. There's a positive and negative to everything. I'm not. Look, this is a leading edge science that I'm not even all that conversant with. But I think that if it happens, if for example, they prove this really is happening, and they, in essence, get a message 50 microseconds before they sent it, we are on our way to time travel.
Well, that's true. Are you going to be the first one in line? Or the second one?
I've said if time travel, and I don't think it's going to happen for human beings in my lifetime, Unless it's already happened, and some of the previous guests I've had on the subject actually have disappeared in time, then otherwise I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime. But I've always said I would choose to go back to the time of Christ to see if it really happened the way it has been written.
Ooh. Well, that would be
wouldn't you want to know that?
Well, I guess because I believe it already, I don't need to.
You don't need. You have so much faith that you really wouldn't need to see it.
No.
God, I wish I had that. I wish I had that kind of faith, but I don't. There's this seed of doubt. I tend toward believing it because there is so much written, so much documented that I really tend toward believing it. But I would love to see it. I would absolutely love to go back and see Christ and see the miracles and really see it happen.
Well, that's true.
I envy you. I really envy you that absolute faith.
Well, it doesn't come easy.
No, I guess it doesn't. So if time travel was possible, where would you go, since you don't need to be reinforced with actually seeing all of that?
I think I would go back to the beginnings of Earth and see how that all happened, if it really happened the way, you know, you see in the History Channel and the National Geographic Channel, if it really happened the way they say it did.
Well, I kind of picture you running as fast as you can with a giant Tyrannosaurus Rex on your tail, you know?
True. Find me a bush quick.
All right. Thanks, Sheila.
Thank you.
You Bye. Take care. So back that far. No, I don't think I would go back that far. I really would like to see what we have this great debate about. There is no greater debate, is there, than life and death and what may or may not be on the other side. It is the greatest question of all, I think. Second wildcard line, Stephen, in Georgia, you're on the air. Hi.
Good evening, Art. How you doing, sir?
I'm fine.
Fantastic. Getting kind of deep here, aren't we? Really
deep. Sometimes it's inevitable.
It sure is. Personally, I've got a few years left to go, and I'd just rather not think about my demise, if you know what I mean.
Well, I was listening, as I said, to William Shatner, and he thinks he's deathly afraid of death. And
you know,
it's because
he would probably be a good interview, and Art, I think all you'd have to do is pick up the phone and get him on any night that you want it.
It could be.
Look here, congratulations are due to you, sir. Hadn't spoken to you in quite a while. Congratulations on the birth of your new baby coming up.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting because we know the exact date of conception. It was while we were in Hong Kong. It was September 15th.
Wonderful
now,
city.
It is a wonderful city. If you do the math, the date of birth is going to be just about on my birthday, which is
Come
June
on, 7th. In December?
And, no, June 17th.
Oh, that's right, June, that's right.
Okay. June 17th is my birthday. Now, right. Would that be something or would that be something?
That's going back. I'm going to tell you, that would be one to really think about. But look here, I hadn't spoken to you since before the elections. How did you like the way everything turned out here in the States?
I thought it was fine. I thought it was predictable.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm kind of like the stock market. The stock market just loves it when we have divided government. And
it did go up, didn't it? And one other thing, I really enjoyed your guest last night, Joel Giroux. He was really good.
He was good, wasn't he?
You know, I'd love to hear him again, and I'm going to try to pick his book up, The Radical, I think Radical Evolution, right?
Anybody who does an interview like that is bound to have written a really good, understandable, fun-to-read book. So
he must have really been prepared for your show last night, too.
I'll say. He was an excellent guest.
I'd love to hear him again.
Okay,
All
buddy,
right,
thank you.
Take care of yourself and take care of that wonderful lady, and happy holidays to you.
Very same to you. Take care. She is a wonderful lady. Her name is Erin. I call her Erin. It's actually Irene. She, to give you an idea of the difference in cultures, something that I'm working very hard on, yesterday during the program, she went to a family picnic here in Manila. She has quite a couple of brothers here in Manila. And she asked me, could I go? And I said, of course you can go. And she, here in the Philippines, we all communicate by text. We don't call each other. It's all text back and forth, and she sent me a text during the show yesterday and said, thank you for allowing me to go. And I went, oh, there, now there's a difference in culture for you. And I went, oh, my God. And I text her back and I said, hun, don't even say anything like that. You are my wife, not my employee, not I'm not your boss. Don't ever say anything like that to me again. You can do whatever you want to do. You are a woman. But, you know, that has not occurred to the women here. They are devoted in a way that is, frankly, somewhat repugnant to a lot of Americans. It's very old-fashioned. Thank you for allowing me to go. Good Lord. So I'm trying to work that part of, and it's a very deep cultural belief, you know, that the man is the absolute king of home and all that baloney that's behind us in the United States. It's certainly not behind us here. And I will not have her anyway. We talked about that. The thing I'm having difficulty with right now is getting her to eat. She's not eating and she's scaring me to death. You know, to her, now, what, nine weeks pregnant or something, everything smells bad. Doesn't matter what it is. Everything tastes not good, but particularly everything smells bad. Doesn't matter what it is. Her food, Philippine food, American food, any food, it smells bad, and she can't eat it. And she's having quite a time with morning sickness, so there you have it. Okay, let's go to Andrew, I believe. Andrew is in Oklahoma. Andrew, hello.
Hi, Art. How are you doing? How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Okay, I was just wanted to let you know that last night's show was absolutely awesome. I enjoyed it. One of the best shows, I think, so far.
Thank you.
I had some questions I thought maybe you could answer. As far as, you know, being able to integrate intelligence into the human, you know, do you think also we could incorporate reasoning or common sense as well?
Wisdom.
Yes.
I kind of doubt it. And, you know, wisdom seems to come with age. And when you're younger, you're smart, your memory is good, right? And you're just smart as a whip, mostly, for the most part. But you don't have wisdom.
Well, do you think that's also the fountain of youth, so to speak, or being able to increase lifespan also?
Well, they're certainly working on that. They're working on perhaps eventually even eliminating death altogether.
Yeah.
I wonder if that would be a good thing or not.
Well, William Shatner would be happy about it.
He would indeed, wouldn't he? Yeah, if you have that belief, then you'd be all on top of that technology.
So say if we could do that, don't you agree that we indeed would have a superhuman on our hands?
Yes. Yes, and that's what the whole program, that's what the whole thing yesterday was about, the fact that we are approaching a mating with machines, humans and machines, and the distinction between human and machine, I think, will begin to blur pretty quickly, next 10 or 20 years. He was right about that.
So what do you think we would do with superhumans, and do you think they already exist?
Maybe the better question is, what do you think superhumans would do with us?
That's a very interesting angle as well.
Yes, it is. They might decide that we're simply just not worth having around anymore. The lesser humans, the unimproved 1.0 versions are just not worth having around anymore unless it's to shine their shoes. So there's going to be a lot of challenges as we move forward in this brave new world. Let's go to Toronto, Canada, on the international line. Terry, you're on the air.
Good day, Art. How are you doing?
I'm just spiffy.
Good. How's the weather in Manila?
Well, actually, the sun is out, and it's a beautiful day. But as I mentioned, we have this monster of a typhoon on the way again.
That's cool. I had an incident back in the 80s where I disappeared for like 6 hours. I don't remember anything that happened. And I woke up.
You just disappeared?
I don't know. I woke up 6 hours later, driving home. I woke up 6 hours later in my bed, and I ended up with a lump in my chest, which I had a friend remove probably last year.
What do you mean you had a friend remove it?
He's a doctor, and he removed it.
I've had
it x-rayed. It changes shape. It moves.
Oh, really?
X-rays, it's a triangle, and the other times it's a square. He removed it and put it in a vial, and it went liquid. We put a in my chest, and it went back to solid again.
Did you say you put it back?
Yeah, I actually put it back in my chest.
Now, you're the first one I've ever heard that's put back an implant.
It's actually really weird.
Wait a minute. Why did you put it back?
Because I don't understand what this thing is.
Well, wait a minute. How do you know it's good?
I don't, but it's not bothering me.
Yeah, but anything that moves around in your chest all on its own, I've never heard of anybody putting it back.
I put it back on my chest. I didn't put it back in my chest.
Oh.
When it was in a test tube.
So you mean kind of like a baby that has been birthed, you put it on your chest and sort of let it gurgle?
Basically. It was a solid, but when we removed it, it turned to a liquid. And then when I put it back on my chest, when it was in the test tube, it turned back to a solid again.